Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Rin Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybrey, and for our Halloween and 6th anniversary episode, we are joined by special guest Ailish Brazel to talk about three adaptations of The Haunted Mansion. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good morning, and welcome to our episode on The Haunted Mansions, plural. Exciting new format for this episode, in which myself, Adam, and our guest are each going to discuss a different adaptation of the Disney Haunted Mansion ride. So I'll introduce our guests. Ailish Brazel, who is going into the second year of her PhD in English Literature, which focuses on horror at home in Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca, Stephen King's Carrie, Roald Dahl's Matilda, and Neil Gaiman's Coraline, which is very relevant to us here. Welcome, Ailish.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Adam. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm very excited to be on this podcast, especially with the topic of The Haunted Mansion. I suppose what fascinates me about this area of research, if you like, is children's literature and films traditionally feature an adventure to another place, followed by a safe return home, and that being, you know, the main goal. Whereas what fascinates me is when the danger lurks inside the home, which is true for the four texts that I'm looking at in my PhD.
That is really interesting. I guess a lot of the children's horror texts we've looked at obviously have kind of figures of authority who are threatening, but quite often they are outside of the home. So they might be headmasters, for instance, or, you know, sinister priests or other authority figures. And sometimes it might be the parents, but say it will be often an element that's come into the home. So if you think of Grinny, for instance, obviously Grinny, the alien grandma, has entered into an otherwise normal suburban home. Whereas, as you said, that's not quite the case in the text you're looking at. So, you know, in Coraline, we have the sense that the kind of other home within the home was always there, or at least has been there for a very, very long time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Matilda's an interesting inclusion there, because I wouldn't necessarily think of that as being sort of focused on the home, but because of the Trunchbull is such a...
Yes, so... They each kind of have similarities, if you like, and then there's a few differences. So with Coraline, obviously we'll be looking at the other parents, and then with Carrie as well, it's her mother. And with Matilda, we definitely be looking at the parents as well, and also the school setting. So it's nice that that one has a slight difference, and it relates then to Rebecca, because it's the authority figure of the housekeeper that really creates the horror for the narrator in that text.
And Carrie and Rebecca are really interesting choices, especially thinking from the perspective of children's horror, because obviously while they're adult horrors, I think they are adult horrors that do appeal potentially to children, because I know that Rebecca was... my partner Antonia's favourite film as a child, alongside Brief Encounter.
Yes.
And one she watched a lot of times as a child. And Carrie, my first exposure to it as a book was a kid called Richard, or Rick, reading it on a year six trip to France. Oh, I remember him up in the bunk bed reading Carrie. And I do think Carrie does feel, I only read it a couple of years ago, and I do think it feels like a children's horror, but with some really lurid elements in there. And when I watched the film, I kind of assumed that the more squicky parts were Brian De Palma. I was like, oh, that De Palma, what's he like? Because King has this reputation for being sort of wholesome on some level or caring about values. And then I read Carrie, I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. The squicky parts all come from Stephen King.
Yeah.
And the Haunted Mansion, Eilish, was your suggestion, I think. What's your connection with that, with the film or the ride? Or?
I suppose with the 2003 film, I liked the idea of, as I said, the house being, you know, the place of horror, but also the children go into the house with their parents, which I thought was kind of interesting, in a way that maybe the horror might be toned down slightly because they have that sort of security of their parental figures there with them. And then you see it throughout the film, the viewpoints are switched between the kids exploring the mansion and Jim, their dad, exploring a different section of it. And it's just the adults' fears and the children's fears are addressed in a way that at the end of the film, it has changed their family dynamic for the better, which I just find very interesting.
Yeah.
Is it a film that you watched as a kid yourself?
Yes.
Did you like it at the time?
I did, actually. Funnily enough, yes. And I always said for years, like, I'd never watch horror films. Oh no, they'd be too scary. And then I started my research and realised I love to read horror. So then anything I read, I would always watch the film version. It turns out I do actually like it. But no, I really did enjoy The Haunted Mansion. Even now, when I watched it recently for this episode, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how much I liked this one.
Oh.
Yeah, I've never seen the 2003 film. Although about the time that came out, I did go on the ride in Disneyland Tokyo, weirdly.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I had a Japanese exchange thing, and when we were in Tokyo, one of the trips they took us on was to Disneyland. So that is where I've experienced this icon of American culture. Slightly bizarre, but
I don't know. I always say that early anime and manga, there's a big Disney influence. Like, if you look at Tezuka and Astro Boy, you know, those big eyes come out of Disney, especially the way Tezuka does animals. You can tell he's watched Bambi, basically. And
yeah,
really, yeah, modelling the cute rabbits and things on on Disney. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of interchange, really.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was trying to sort of think about what I remembered from going on this ride about almost 20 years ago. I remembered the initial room, the room that stretches, you know, where you go in, and then with the guide, and the it's a room that's an elevator, and and I remember the ballroom. It's one of the set pieces is the kind of haunted ballroom, and the ghosts are dancing, and like they had these, you know, kind of 3D looking projections that were like really amazing to me at the time because I hadn't seen anything like that. And to be fair, that is more memories than any other ride I went on that trip. So I think it was the most memorable thing. But I did watch a sort of recent YouTube like ride through of the 2023 version to refresh my memory. But essentially, the Haunted Mansion is a dark ride that first, I think, launched quite early and at the original Disneyland in, I think, 1969. And then went on to the Orlando one, and then Disneyland Tokyo in the 80s. So it's quite an institution of Disneyland's and
I've only been to Paris as a kid, and I don't think it was there, although I would have been way too scared of years to go on it. So
I've been to the one in Paris, and I have to say it's one of my favorite attractions. And where it's located in Disneyland, it's just off of New Orleans Square, which I think is really cool. Sense. Yeah.
Okay, so the film, I just watched the recently released film version, the 2023 one, and that is set in New Orleans. So is that the case for your films too?
Yes.
Is the Muppets one set in New Orleans?
The Muppets, I don't know. The Muppets one is set in Muppets. It doesn't really have a location. one of the ghosts does have a southern accent, so possibly. But it's
okay.
Not.
So we better explain that we watched three different adaptations. So I guess in a bid to spearhead a new franchise in the likes of Pirates of the Caribbean, Disney have attempted three times to start a successful Haunted Mansion franchise of films. And so we have individually watched one of these three different versions. Eilish, do you want to start explaining the version you know and you've seen when it came out and who it stars and the basic plot of it?
Yeah, that's perfect. So The Haunted Mansion is a 2003 film directed by Rob Minkoff, and the opening sequence takes the audience back in time to a glamorous masquerade party happening at Gracie Manor, which is the main setting. The house is alive, you know, the colours are vibrant, the music's playing, the costumes are extraordinary. And then tragedy strikes. So Mr. Gracie, the master of the manor, his bride-to-be, is seen to have written a suicide letter and poisoned herself. When he finds his true love dead, his devastation leads to his own suicide. And this house clearly has a past that is going to haunt the present. Then the film reverts to the present day, which features the Evers family. Jim and Sarah are the parents of Michael, who's age 10, and Megan, who's 13, and they own a real estate agency, Evers and Evers. They're supposed to be going on an adventure, but they get a last minute phone call to go to Gracie Manor. Even that part is creepy because Sarah gets the phone call and she's told to come alone, which is just very strange. The owner wishes to discuss the house as he wants to move on to the other side, that is, because he's dead. And the family gets stuck at the manor for the night because of the raging storm. It floods the river. I always love terrible weather conditions that comes with a scary house, because I always feel like the weather just illuminates the horror that's to come, or it enhances the horror that's already happening. So I think the adventure that unfolds there is more than any of them bargained for. So the servants that are in the house are all ghosts, because the master couldn't move on as he was waiting for his true love. So as a result, none of the servants moved on because they were continuing to serve the house and the master. In particular, the butler, Ramsley, is the main antagonist of this film. His cheeks are gaunt and he's very pale, even for a ghost. Jim, the dad character played by Eddie Murphy, he tells him to get rid of the ashy white look by getting a tan, which is quite funny. Ramsley floats around the mansion and kind of appears unexpectedly everywhere. And the plot twist is that Ramsley forged Elizabeth's suicide note way back when, poisoned her and hid her original love note, accepting Edward's proposal. And I suppose the main adventure then of the film is that the kids and the parents have to find this note and break the devil's curse that has been placed on the house so that the ghosts can ascend and leave. And Ramsley actually ends up in what I assume is the pits of hell as a fire dragon comes out of the fireplace and just takes him away.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, Ramsley, or the Hatbox Man.
Yes.
In the version of the Haunted Mansion I've just seen by Justin Simeon, 2023. Disappointingly played by Jared Leto, I have to say. He really shouldn't be let anywhere near a children's film. is also dragged down to the pits of hell at the end.
Yes.
And also has notable kind of gaunt cheekbones.
Hmm. So I think you might have drawn the short straw of the Haunted Mansion adaptations, Adam.
Well, yeah, which it's surprisingly moribund, this film. to be honest, it shouldn't be as bad as it is, because it's directed by Justin Simeon, who directed Dear White People, which I saw when it came out and enjoyed quite a bit. Thought was pretty funny. It's got a pretty decent cast. The main protagonist, I guess, taking over the Eddie Murphy role here is Gabby, played by Rosario Dawson, who's winningly charismatic and engaging. Her son is pretty adorable, Travis, played by Chase Dillon. And then she's sort of accompanied by this assembled motley crew of Ben, who is a scientist in the kind of spurious, defined in the kind of, whose research is defined in the kind of spurious way you would expect in a Disney film. So he does research into dark matter and quantum entanglement or something like that. But that basically means he actually researches ghosts. but he doesn't want to call them ghosts because he's a scientist. So yeah, the whole film has this sort of theme of the dubious, I'd say, compatibility between science and faith. Like, aren't they just two sides of the same coin, really? it does feel like it's trying to appeal to a largely religious American audience, or an audience that really does believe in ghosts. And there's an earnestness about that, but sometimes it makes some very clunky, like, oh, dark matter, that's just ghosts, right? there is a priest, Father Kent, played by a spacey Owen Wilson, doing his Owen Wilson shtick. And Harriet, played by Tiffany Haddish, who is a medium. And then Danny DeVito, playing a sort of university lecturer gone to seed, I suppose. Play a character called Bruce Davis. So these various experts of sorts are kind of assembled by Rosario to help investigate the house and hopefully banish the spirits. Because she's just bought this house, and obviously the ghosts, particularly this Hatbox Man, are making it very hard to settle in. And it's quite similar to the Ghostbusters reboot, although not as good, I'd say. Which makes sense, because apparently it was scripted by the same person. And yeah, it exists in a state of near constant montage. Like it really feels like this film has been script doctored to death. Like it feels like there were a lot of beats from, I guess, the Eddie Murphy film, and also particularly Theme Park Ride, that the screenwriters were told they had to include. And so it's all kind of exposition montage, pretty much. Like, I've rarely seen a film with such bad flow. Like, because I said, like, as you probably gathered from the cast, this is a pretty winning cast. These are talented people. And it's not a bad director either. But yeah, it has really has no sense of rhythm in terms of the edit. Like it is just a bunch of exposition and set pieces stuck together. So it doesn't really manage to create any creepy atmosphere or ambience at all. Like, quite remarkably so, considering it's all set in a creepy mansion. Like, there's kind of no point really at which everything settles down to actually create creepiness, basically. But what does sound the same are the set pieces, and the ghosts themselves. So we have the ballroom with the dancers, we have this hat box man, and some of the special effects, like the endlessly stretching corridor. So we'll go through that. And Ren, you opted for the Muppets version.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of watching Muppets Haunted Mansion from 2021. Yeah, we're soon to be in an era of Haunted Mansion adaptations at the moment, but
The new
the
era.
new era, 20, almost 20 years without one, and then two come along at once. Yeah, which is currently on Disney Plus. And it's only 50 minutes, and it's a kind of Halloween special, as this episode might be. I haven't quite decided. Happy Halloween, if in fact this is out on Halloween. But yeah, in the Muppets version, it's Halloween, and the rest of the Muppets are kind of having a Halloween party, and they're on a video call to Gonzo, who's in the back of a taxi. Kermit and Miss Piggy are dressed as each other. It's very cute. Gonzo's going on a fear challenge to stay a night in the Haunted Mansion with Pepe the King Prawn. This is the 100th anniversary of a magician called the Great MacGuffin's disappearance. The challenge to survive the night in the haunted house. Mackie was a little upset that Gonzo was paired with Pepe rather than Rizzo the Rat, which is the more traditional combination, I think. But
I mean the classic pairing from The Muppets Christmas Carol,
yeah.
which is almost a children's horror film. Certainly the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come really scared me as a kid.
But yeah, in this one we have Pepe as in the kind of sidekick role. But they arrive, and they have when they're outside, before they even get into the house, they have this sort of little ghost introduction, with a song, which I linked to the two of you to get a little taste of the Muppets one, where they're introduced to some of the ghosts, and Gonzo's very very gung-ho about this whole endeavor, and he says he isn't scared of anything. But they're met by Will Arnett, is the ghost host,
Oh, okay.
in this one, featuring wearing a fetching floral waistcoat, and he explains that they have to survive the night in the Haunted Mansion, or they'll stay there forever. Then they just are kind of roam around the haunted mansion. We have the sort of plot points, I guess, is that Gonzo has to kind of admit that he's scared of something, because he's sort of saying, "Oh no, I'm the great Gonzo. I'm not scared of anything." But he, when he's in room 999, he is faced with the fact that he's actually scared of never seeing his friends again. And Pepe's challenge is, we've established that he's quite a thirsty prawn at the opening of the film. That he becomes enchanted by a beautiful southern lady, played by Taraji P. Henson, who is chewing the scenery quite enjoyably. And she's a kind of female Blackbeard type. There's the evil bride who's trying to add Pepe to her collection of doomed lovers. Gonzo sort of escapes his own challenge, but then he has to save Pepe, and they race out before the sunrise. Will Arnett turns up and says they're free to go, but then it's revealed that he is in fact the Great MacGuffin, and he has a French fish in the breast pocket of his suit, which I just found very, very amusing. I don't really know. I couldn't find any clips of this French fish, but it's just this little red. It's called the Pee Wee the Red Herring, and it goes "Au revoir" in this little squeaky voice, and it's made me laugh quite a lot. And then it ends with a cover of "Dancing in the Moonlight," which
oh no,
which I never, which, you know, I never realised was not originally by Top Loader.
I've heard as much, but I haven't.
Yeah.
For shame, Top Loader. You tricked us all.
If you're a millennial, you cannot not think of Top Loader. Yeah. So that's the Muppets Haunted Mansion, and it was quite good fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, awesome. No, I mean I definitely like, I'm generally pro the idea of Muppet adaptations of anything, to be honest. Like, I can't remember, did we play this game before when you have to try to think of what the best Muppets adaptation would be? Because I stick by the fact that the Wicker Man would be the best Muppets film.
Oh my god. Yes.
I don't know whether you'd have like a stern like Sam the Eagle as Lord Summersisle, or whether it would be Kermit. I feel that it should probably be Kermit.
Oh, I want to live in this universe.
Well, I guess AI will make it. I just work on the assumption that in about 10 years' time, we'll live in the weird dystopia where we're able to say, you know, Alexa, whatever, give me Muppets version of the Wicker Man, and it will just generate it, and I can watch that. So,
and it'll give you a cameo in it, and you can be one of
you can watch yourself burn in the Wicker Man at the end. And share the image to your social media.
Yeah. we have this bouquet of haunted mansions. I guess it makes sense to kind of to talk about the points of similarity between them. Because they're all sort of presumably hitting the same beats of the theme park ride to a certain extent,
although maybe in different orders, because you said in the theme park ride itself the ever expanding corridor is right at the start.
Yeah, it's kind of where you're like where you're first I guess the first herded into, I think. That's a sort of introduction to the ride, but
yeah,
which was very much the case in the Muppets, is that they come in they come into the house, Will Arnett's there, he's like, welcome to this. He basically very much almost like verbatim said what the host in the ride says, yeah, to the Muppets.
So, but because he's playing, I will say, because he's playing a magician, right, I just keep thinking of him as Job from Arrested Development. Saying, I'm an illusionist, not a magician.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of been overtaken as BoJack Horseman in my head because I've watched so much BoJack.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
So where does the corridor appear in the Eddie Murphy vehicle, Eilish?
The butler Ramsley tries to get Jim offside because Jim's wife looks exactly like the master's wife that died many years ago, so they think that it's her that has come back. So he tells Jim to go to the library, that the master wants a word with him, and Jim thinks he's going to land the sale of the house, so he's all excited about this, but he's poking around the library and he lifts a little like delf head and he realizes that it opens a secret passage, and he gets trapped in this secret passage, and it's the corridor that kind of keeps extending, and he's stuck in there while Edward Gracie, the master, is trying to woo Sarah, Jim's wife.
I quite like that, the idea of it being used as a trap to kind of buy time. In Justin Simeon one, it's shown near the start, so after a little introduction to New Orleans. And actually, a film's not the best when your favourite thing about it is the opening and ending credits, which was the case here, which have some kind of fun New Orleans scenery establishing shots with like a New Orleans brass band, which was nice.
Have either of you seen the most recent Interview with a Vampire adaptation?
No.
Oh, it's very good. It's reminding me of that because it's set in New Orleans and they have their big mansion where they live their dissolute vampire lives. So,
I
do recommend
it. That sounds fun. that'd be good because I'm perpetually I'm always waiting for the sequel to Vampire the Masquerade, Bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
Which is based on the White Wolf role-playing game, which I played in uni. Really great. So early 2000s role-playing game. Like, it was quite buggy on release, but it's been patched and, really fondly remembered, but the sequel has been in development for years and years. And Cara Ellison was writing the script, and I really, really like Cara Ellison's writing. Used to be a games journalist. I met her very briefly at a museum event and was really enthusiastic and dorky and awkward. I tend to get very awkward when I meet someone who's writing or like art I enjoy and managed to just be weird. I was really excited about that, but then like she was sort of taken off the project and the whole thing has sort of fallen to pieces by the looks of it. So a new good vampire thing would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's it on?
I don't know. You know, one of the ones that I watched legally that I just can't remember the name of at this very moment.
Yeah. Now TV.
Maybe.
So after we get that it's set in New Orleans, have Gabby and Travis rocking up to their new... Has they bought the Haunted Mansion to move there? There's not much explanation as to why this decrepit looking mansion, apart from like Gabby's like, oh, she thought we'd make a change. Fair enough. And yeah, it's Travis, her kid, who sees this suit of armour that seems to move and reappear in different places, and then he starts getting spooked out, encounters the hatbox man, and then is faced very briefly with the optical effect of the ever-expanding corridor. You only really get a glimpse of it, and it's then brought back later when Ben, the scientist, Lakeith Stanfield's character, is trying to escape and run away, and he's then running down the corridor, which extends.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fairly effective, but I definitely prefer the idea of it being kind of used as a trap. I think that's nice.
Yeah. I think there's also... In the Muppets one, at least, there's kind of two versions. There's the one that I was thinking of is the extending downwards parlor room, where the paintings kind of stretch downwards as the lift descends. But then there is also an extending horizontal corridor.
Oh yeah, so the extending downwards is kind of used almost like an escape room, like Jumanji style, in the 2003 Haunted Mansion. So I can't quite remember what they're trying to escape. I think probably Jared Leto is terrorising them, and they have to kind of clamber up the paintings or something to get to the top. I don't know. It was all a bit Crystal Maze, that bit, basically.
Yeah.
What about in the Eddie Murphy vehicle, Eilish? Is there also the kind of elevator or a vertical extension? I mean, presumably there are the paintings, I imagine, because these paintings that change are a big part, I understand it, of the theme park ride. So I imagine they must be... So there are definitely the creepy paintings that change in this 23 film version.
Yes, and their eyes follow you as, you know, you're walking along the corridor, or as the characters are walking along the corridor. And at one point, actually, I think... how Eddie Murphy gets out of his secret passage is he comes to the end and there's two like eye holes, if you like, and he sticks his face in and the camera shows from the other side, so you can see his eyes in this portrait, and it turns out it's like a door and he comes through that way.
Yeah, so there's paintings and there's marble busts as well that
they sing, don't they?
Yeah, they don't actually. There's songs in the Muppets one, but the busts don't actually sing. The busts are just a cameo for Beaker, and Beaker's friend. I'm not the best at my Muppets identification.
I always just think of them in terms of the Muppets Christmas Carol, so they're the charity workers. Who Michael Caine is so mean to.
Well, in the in the Eddie Murphy version, the singing busts are outside on the way to the graveyard, so Jim and the kids have to find this key, and this is the key to breaking the curse. But they start singing, like, annoying Eddie Murphy's character basically as he's going past, and he's already freaked out because he's gone into this graveyard and he has to open this black crypt and take a key from this dead skeleton's hand. So these singing busts just really annoy him. But actually at the end the family do get to go on their adventure with a few special guests, so they have Madame Leota in the back seat, and then they've strapped the four singing busts to the back of their car and they're singing away as the car is driving off.
Nice. Madame Leota is in the Muppets one as Madame Pigota, played by Miss Piggy, who turns up for a little seance. She looks radiant. She's a very it's a very good look for Miss Piggy in her crystal ball. Not very much in the way of plot. She's just there. she shows them to the next bit of the ride, I guess.
Yes. So in the 23 one, Madame Leota's up in the attic in her crystal ball, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, who it's not her greatest performance. Like, she goes for it, you know, it's fairly scenery chewing. And yeah, she's been imprisoned there by the Hatbox man, and then they summon her through a seance, and she becomes a kind of helpful guide who, yeah, I guess, like Miss Piggy, points them in the next direction, really. Mm-hmm. Like, she feels fairly instrumental in terms of the plotting.
Yeah. The Hatbox man is Fozzie Bear, by the way.
Oh, that sounds quite scary.
He doesn't have a massive role. He's just kind of there in the ballroom scene, which I guess is the next set piece.
Now I'm picturing Jared Leto dressed up as Fozzie Bear, and I feel kind of sick.
Sorry. after they see Madame Pigota, they kind of get in the extending corridor, and Sweetums drives them on a food trolley down to the haunted ballroom.
I love Sweetums.
that was when I had to look up. I was like, oh, who's this big hairy Muppet? That's Sweetums. I'm quite a late comer to the Muppets. I didn't see a Muppets film until I was an adult.
Oh, wow.
Me too. Actually.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I really, really loved Muppets Christmas Carol and Treasure Island as a kid. And I swear I played, like, an interactive CD-ROM of Muppets Treasure Island as well.
That sounds likely.
Yeah, well, quite a lot of my childhood was playing, like, interactive CD-ROMs from the library, which largely just involved clicking on things to get comic sound effects. That was all the gameplay I needed. And then I went to the cinema to see Muppets in Space, which I was really kind of deeply disappointed by. I do wonder if I should rewatch it, if it was actually better than I remember. But it's about Gonzo, like, finding out about his alien parentage.
Non-binary icon Gonzo.
Yeah. Well, Gonzo was always my favourite. Like, I do love Gonzo. Although, if you look at the Muppet Show and look at, like, Gonzo, the puppet for Gonzo, like, the first series, he looks so much more wretched.
Well, actually,
like, they really clean Gonzo up.
My texture of the week is Gonzo related, so should we take this
sweet.
Opportunity?
Oh, sweet, okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I've got some pickup sticks.
I've got some pens to band together. Sorry about this, Ernest.
Texture of the week.
Would you like to go first, Ailish?
Yes, okay, thank you. So for the texture of the week segment, I thought the feeling of the glass ball that Madame Leota's head is in would be quite cool. Like, it's delicate, perfectly round, I'd imagine cold and quite heavy with her head inside. So I actually have it's like a Halloween decoration, and it's a glass ball, and there is a woman's head inside it. So I was kind of thinking, like, can you hear that if you're
yeah,
that kind of, like, glass noise, if you like.
Amazing. No, that's great.
Oh, that's great. It's really nice to have a smooth texture, actually. I think me and Ren so often go for kind of rough, scrabbly textures.
It's true.
Ren, so you said Gonzo related texture.
Yeah, when Gonzo is in room 999, having to face his fear, he's confronted with a kind of older version of himself, and then an even older version of himself. And as Gonzo grows old, his nose like shrivels like a carrot, like withers. So Gonzo's withered carrot nose is my texture.
Oh dear, that's awful. mine is crunchy scrambled eggs.
Oh no!
Because there's a scene where Gabby is making food for Travis, Ben, Father Kent, Harriet, and Bruce. But one of those kooky ghosts keeps messing with her cooking, and smashes the eggs in the frying pan. And she gets so kind of fed up, she just goes along with it. It's like, whatever. And and so serves up the scrambled eggs with the broken shards of eggshell in it.
Gosh, like, we need to talk about Kevin.
Yes, like that. And there's and so there's a close-up of the crunchy scrambled eggs.
That's upsetting.
Yeah, which is quite an upsetting texture.
Yeah. were you making notes in the cinema, by the way?
Well, I was, and I could tell I was, because actually, irritatingly, in my my notebook, which says on the front, written and directed by Adam. Which is a notebook that... some of my film students, I think, must have got me when I was leaving for the Netherlands rather sweetly. But I could tell I was doing it in the cinema because I was eating boiled sweets and there's the kind of sticky, luminous yellow residue of a crunched boiled sweet in between two of the pages here, quite unpleasantly. So, yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, it's quite dark in the cinema, so my notes they're legible, but they're a bit messy. I don't know if anyone would have thought the fact that I was taking this film so seriously. I was making notes. I've got ghost winks in quotation marks. Ghost winks, which is the kind of sentimental term for when, like, a ghost gives you a little friendly or sentimental reminder that they exist. So it's like, yeah, so like if your beloved grandma loved eating Wotsits, and then, like, you went into a room and there was a sudden bag of Wotsits on the sofa. This is quite similar to the actual example, by the way. it's probably Cheetos or some American variant. But, yeah, you know, and there was a sudden bag of Wotsits on the sofa. You'd be like, oh, it's a ghost wink.
Mm-hmm. I see, yeah.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of kind of attempts at sentimentality in this film that... I don't know. You know, it's a film about a spooky mansion with kooky ghosts. I didn't really need the sentimentality, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like maybe it works a bit better in the Eddie Murphy film. Like, you seem to quite like, Eilish, this idea that the family's brought together by the experiences.
Yes, I did like that. I suppose it's like the juxtaposition between adult and the children's viewpoint, because they're each overcoming their own fears. Like, in the beginning, Jim, Eddie Murphy's character, is like, I don't believe in ghosts, you know, not a chance. And then when he meets Madame Leota, she, like, he's trapped in the chair and it's spinning round, and he starts chanting, there's no place like home, there's no place like home, from The Wizard of Oz, which is quite funny. And he is scared then throughout the house. And then, like, Michael, his son, has a serious fear of spiders, and that's shown before they get to the mansion. And then there's a point where Jim and his daughter Megan get stuck in the mausoleum, actually, and Michael has to open the door from the other side, but it's covered in spiders. And he debates about it. They're getting chased by zombies, and he does take his time about deciding to open the door, but he eventually does. And who else has a fear? Megan has a fear of never leaving the mansion. And then Sarah is also, Jim's wife, is afraid of losing her family because Ramsley threatens the children. And that's why she agrees to the marriage between herself and Edward the ghost. So they all have something to overcome. You know, the fear, the tension and the anxiety that they all experienced in the house prompted, I suppose, the change in their family dynamic. So Jim had been a workaholic and the kids weren't really, it just was a disconnect. Whereas at the end, they're all happy out, going on their adventure that they didn't get to go on. And they're just, it's a nice shift, I suppose, from the start of the film. So I think that's where the sentimentality comes into it. But definitely throughout, there is a few jump scares and moments where you're, you know, looking, going, oh, what's going to happen now? And it does work out.
Yeah, there aren't really many jump scares or many scares full stop, to be honest, in the 23 Haunted Mansion. The only sequence is when they go up into the attic. There's the ghost. I don't know if this was the sort of Bluebeard type figure, but like a ghost of someone who beheaded all their husbands.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's a ghost of an axe, basically. And you know, the axe crashes down, and you know, the ghost tries to behead Ben.
I think she's called
a little bit.
I think she's called Constance.
Constance. Okay, so yeah. So the scene with Constance was a little bit scary. I suppose that was probably the most effective scene, I'd say, in the 23. Is Constance in the Eddie Murphy one as well, then?
No, which is what I actually found quite interesting, because the story of the attraction, like in Disneyland, is about this bride who's looking for her lost lover, whereas in the Eddie Murphy version, it's the husband that's looking for the bride, and the bride is like portrayed as a really friendly, really lovely figure, and it's the butler that's the main villain, if you like, because he didn't think she was good enough to marry the master of the manor, so that's why he killed her.
I do wonder, I watched a sort of video about the kind of the development of the Haunted Mansion ride, and it's saying that like the person who was originally tasked to come up with the plot for it went through like four or five different concepts, and that Walt Disney rejected before it kind of found its final form. So I wonder if the Eddie Murphy one is based on one of the earlier plots that it's possible. Some of them were rejected as too dark or too...
Yeah. Now, I have to say the doppelganger element definitely adds to the eerie feeling between... So Elizabeth was the master's bride-to-be, and then Sarah is Eddie Murphy's wife, and they are the spit and image of each other. And Sarah wears the wedding dress that Elizabeth never got the chance to when she's going through with her wedding to the master of the house. So it definitely gives you a very creepy feeling.
Yeah.
Now that sounds like a useful kind of structural device. It reminds me of Francis Ford Coppola's version of Bram Stoker's Dracula, which obviously sticks pretty closely to the novel, but then also adds in the idea of Jonathan Harker's girlfriend. I can't remember which way round the names are in Capella's version, but that she's like the spitting image and possibly the kind of reincarnation of Vlad the Impaler's lover, and Dracula is Vlad the Impaler, and so like that's why he falls in love with her, is like she's reincarnated looks exactly like her. Yeah, I think it can be quite a useful device, that.
Yes.
Are there any good gravestones in your films? Because there were some kind of comedy gravestones in the 23 version, which were kind of fun. Like, the one I enjoyed the most, which I wrote down, was "A maid who liked to misbehave now does so in her grave."
The Muppets used the ones from the ride. So I can't remember. It's one that's like Cousin Hewitt, who his ghost appears in like striped prison outfits, and he's like, "Oh, we all know you didn't do it," and he winks. and there's a woman who is a writer, but her ink was poisoned, so she died by her quill and things.
It sounds like there's a graveyard scene in the Eddie Murphy one as well.
Yes, when the family first arrive to the mansion, they can't get in the front door, so they just kind of explore around the back, and the kids are absolutely horrified that there's a graveyard in the back garden. And Eddie Murphy's like, "We just won't put that on the ad," like, you know. but other than that, apart from the fact that they go into the mausoleum, there's no real mention of any of the other graves that I can remember anyway.
So is the Eddie Murphy one very much set just within the Haunted Mansion?
Yes, so it starts at home. It starts with Eddie Murphy closing a deal of a house, and he misses their wedding anniversary dinner. So he comes home and he's all apologetic, and he's like, "Right, okay, look, we'll go on an adventure this weekend." And Sarah's all excited, "That's great." And he's like, "I'll go tell the kids." And meanwhile, she gets this really creepy phone call to say, "Come to the house." And when she writes down the address, Eddie Murphy realises where it is and that it's a mansion. And he's like, "Right, we'll take a pit stop, 20 minutes tops." That's his catchphrase, if you like, throughout the whole film, because nothing takes 20 minutes. And that's how they pull up to the mansion, and the gates are locked, they can't get in, and just as they're leaving, the gate opens itself, and it's the same thing with the front door, which I think is actually very cool, because the idea of the door separates them from the real world, if you like, and then once they cross the threshold of the house, they're in this ghost spooky world. Which you can see in, like, another example even is in Disney's Monsters, Inc., like, Boo's bedroom door separates her from, like, okay, she's in the real world on one side, and then the other side she's in Monsters Incorporated. And even in Coraline too, actually, the little cupboard door, you know, she crosses over to the other world.
Yeah.
It sounds like with the Muppets that it's very much... the whole film plays out pretty much within the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah. Just the taxi ride there and back. Yeah. Otherwise, it's entirely in the house.
Just one of the issues with the 23 one is they keep leaving the mansion.
Oh, really?
A lot. So, like, with this sort of... gaggle of characters, they don't arrive all at once. So at first it's Gabby and Travis, and then they kind of recruit Ben, and we focus on Ben a bit, and then we have Father Kent, and then Harriet, and then Bruce. So they have to go out to meet Harriet, and then they have to go out to a university lecture to meet Bruce.
I don't think you can keep leaving the haunted house. That's not how it works.
I know. Like, it makes it much less threatening, because it's like, well, they just keep leaving. And they try to sort of explain it that the ghosts can kind of follow them out of the mansion. And there's one nice idea that the ghosts almost take their paintings with them. So there's a sea captain ghost or a sailor.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's in either of the others.
No.
Okay, that must have been invented for this. So the sea captain ghost then haunts Ben and kind of floods his apartment, basically. which is why he then returns to the mansion. But yeah, that's I think, partly why it doesn't sustain a creepy atmosphere, is they just keep walking out of the mansion. yeah. So it never really feels as claustrophobic as it should feel, to be honest.
Yeah. Should we go to the...
And it's a bit confusing as well, I'll just add, that there's also two mansions, which I didn't understand.
What?
Yeah. So that's the whole dimension. And then they have to go somewhere else. They have to go to Crump Manor.
Right.
Because it's like, the Hatbox ghost, his skeleton, to dispel him, they need to get, like, his head or something. And he didn't actually die in the Haunted Mansion. He happened to die down the road in Crump Manor. So it's like, right, we've got to go to Crump Manor. And it's like, what? So we're not even in the Haunted Mansion now. We're in Crump Manor.
That's strange.
So, yeah, odd, I guess it's the choice. Haunted Mansion plus the other mansion with the dead body, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
is Crump Manor another ride?
It sounds like it should... I'll look it up. It sounds like it should be a ride. Crump Manor. I don't know. Alistair Crump. No. I've just gone to the Haunted Mansion fandom wiki and it's just referencing the 23 film. No, it was a strange innovation. There is Elizabeth Adam Crump Health and Rehab Center, which is a nursing home in Virginia.
Good to know.
I think that's unrelated. one star review on Google reviews. On June 16th, I received two calls about his eating from the speech therapist. One star.
Okay.
Wow, it's not really the speech therapist's remit, is it? Let's be fair. One star.
Right. Should we go to the ballroom? We haven't talked about.
Oh yeah. Well. Yeah, the ballroom isn't given nearly enough time in the 23 version, to be honest. Like, you get a very short... It's basically the ballroom's left to the end credits.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get a nice dance in the end credits in the ballroom, but you only see it very briefly before then.
Oh.
As I said, the opening and end credits are the best part of this film.
What about the Eddie Murphy version? What's the ballroom?
Yes, like... so this happens when Edward is trying to woo Sarah and she's fascinated like with the architecture of the house, and he's showing her the different rooms and he's referring to himself as his great-grandfather and explaining his great-grandfather's tragic story, even though it's his own. But they're in the ballroom and he just kind of says, "Don't you remember?" And she's looking at him like, "Remember what?" And he's like, "We were here and we were dancing." And then all the ghosts appear and she gets really kind of freaked out. She's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." Because he's so convinced that she's Elizabeth. So he's trying to show her the last room they were in together, and it was the ballroom. And then you've got all the figures dancing around them.
Hmm.
What about in the Muppets?
In the Muppets, Sweetums drives them on the food trolley down to the haunted ballroom, and there's a kind of sort of show going on with Fozzie Bear as the hatbox man doing a I think he's tried to do comedy and he's not doing very well at it. Then Kermit Ghost is kind of the compere of the show, and then they sing a song to welcome their new guests about how they're all stuck in this house for eternity and how they're going to join them too and so on, that sort of thing. But it's quite fun. It's the kind of the showiest bit of the film. Yes, in the
Yeah,
ballroom.
nice.
You have
I mean, the bet the
heckling Muppets are there.
Oh, Statler and Waldorf, something like that.
Possibly, yeah.
Oh, I bet any Muppets fans are probably going to be a bit annoyed listening to this episode.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Muppets fans. I'm doing my best.
There we go. Statler and Waldorf—they're the two old men up in the balcony.
They're having a heckle. I don't know if there's that much more to it, really.
Well, I mean, I found the best adaptation. I found the best adaptation of the Haunted Mansion anyway, which I've sent you, of the ballroom scene, which we can link to in the show notes, posted by Classics of Game, which is apparently the unreleased Game Boy Advance version of the Haunted Mansion.
Wow.
In which you play some kind of, I don't know, it looks like a kind of goth Miley Cyrus, walking around the ballroom with various goats, sort of, I don't know, there's a sort of weird evil flower like vine, and then a kind of, I think the butler's there, kind of floating.
It's very like Halloween pinball vibes.
Yeah, Halloween pinball vibes, classic.
I did want to mention the screaming goat. Just it didn't really have anywhere to put it, but there's a goat that turns up and screams in the Muppets version. That's like the thing closest to a jump scare is the screaming goat.
I assume that's not in the ride.
I like. Did either of you have the screaming goat?
No.
No, I think that must be that sounds like a Muppets joke to me. I mean, that does sound like a great idea for a ghost train though, because the most I've ever been scared in ghost trains, like, when the ride operator just turns up at the end of the track to stop the carriage, just doing their job, and I've just screamed at them like full throated. I went on a terrible ghost train in a car park, which was just like none of the lights worked, so it was just literally a dark ride. And then at the end, it was completely anticlimactic, but at the end, when the person came to just stop the ride, I really screamed. But yeah, like bringing on a goat into a ghost train and just having the goat scream at the ride goers, I think would be really effective. That would be great. Like, especially if you're setting up a ghost train in the country or on a farm, like Jimmy's Farm here in Suffolk, there's a ghost train there, bring on a goat.
Maybe you can do that when you finally realize your ghost train
I
dreams.
know. I've said, this is a repeated thing I've said on the podcast, that if I ever win the lottery, all of my monies are going into not charitable endeavors, but ghost trains, basically. Like, I don't understand these stupid millionaires who like squander their money on like fast cars and champagne. Like, seriously, hire people to make amazing ghost trains with your own monster designs. Like, I can't see why you'd want to spend money on anything else.
Any final thoughts on respective haunted mansions? Is there anything we'd like to see in a fourth Haunted Mansion adaptation?
Well, something I thought the 2003 version did very well, like, as I said earlier, I watched it as a child. Definitely it was my favourite Halloween film. But obviously as an adult now, I watched it more recently for this episode, and they definitely appeal to older viewers. Like, there's a scene where Michael, they're in the graveyard and the ghosts are kind of all floating around, and Michael says that iconic line from the Sixth Sense horror film, "I see dead people." And when I was watching it, I was laughing, like, oh yeah, I know what, you know, I know what that's from. And then when Jim is stuck in the passageway, there's an old telephone and it's ringing, and this is the moment, I think, where the, well, I was doing this, and I'm assuming other, say, older members of the audience were watching, saying, don't answer the phone, don't answer the phone. Of course he answers, and on the other end of the line, it's Ramsley. Now, he doesn't say anything, but he knows Jim's exact location because he answered the phone. So it just, it's very atmospheric. It adds that kind of creepy. You really get the feeling that, you know, this butler is evil.
I
think
more creepiness, I think.
Yeah, I think I would have liked to have seen more done with the paintings, like actually being able to enter the paintings. Because I feel like that, you know, then you can have the film go into different styles. Like, you know, you can have them go into like an impressionist painting, or like a cubist painting or something. Or you could have the ghosts looking as they do out, you know, like a strange Picasso-like ghost, for instance.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would like any future adaptations to have someone with a French fish in their pocket, because that was my favourite part.
Are you hoping for a spin-off film just about the French fish?
Yeah.
Presumably this was a Muppet fish, like a puppet fish, or was it an actual fish, like a live fish?
No, I mean, it looked like, you know, the, like, Japanese, like, fish pastries? Like, they're like a sweet pastry in the shape of a fish. It looked like one of those.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess it's just like a fish, but, you know, like that, like that shape of fish.
Yeah. What did Mackie? So you watched this with
Mackie, right? No, I just told her about it. And she just said, expressed her disappointment about the lack of Rizzo. Because, I mean, Rizzo was there. He had a little cameo, but not enough Rizzo.
What was the Swedish chef in it?
He was, yes. He was there in the ballroom scene. He said he was going to cater. Yeah. They're talking about catering the funeral meal for Gonzo and Pepe, and the Swedish chef comes up, and the subtitle said underneath, speaking Swedish, and I was like, is he is that Swedish? I think that was a little bit generous.
I mean, I feel like if you're making a kind of horror Muppets, I mean, it sounds like it wasn't a horror Muppets film exactly, but The Swedish Chef is quite scary, to be honest. I know in terms of Muppet video game adaptations, there was a Muppets Doom clone, or a Muppets game with a bit, honestly, like Doom, but you're playing the Swedish Chef. Right, and I think you're fighting giant vegetables.
Okay.
So yeah, I can't swear 100% to that, but I'm pretty sure that that exists.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Ailish, for joining us on this experimental slightly chaotic episode about various haunted mansions. Yeah, it's been really great to have you here.
Thank you. It's been really nice.
Is there any? Do you want people to find you anywhere, or do you just want to be a mysterious voice in the ether?
No, I'm on Twitter as Ailish Brazel, so easy to find.
Cool, great. Our intro music is by Maki Yamazaki, a famed Rizzo lover. Our outro is by Joe Kelly. Our artwork's by Letty Wilson. I have all the details to that in the show notes, along with the transcript. If you enjoyed this episode, you can leave us a review. It's always nice. And you can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter, just about, kind of, still hanging on at stillscaredpod, and Instagram at stillscaredpodcast. Right.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to make a collage for this.
I am, yeah. this is my new resolution to make a collage for each episode for Instagram. So that's the little extra treat you get if you follow us on Instagram. do you have a sign off for us, Adam?
Yeah, don't tell your speech therapist about your diet. Creepy kids. Like, it's wrong. You shouldn't tell them.
One star.
All right.
One star. See you later, creepy kids. Bye.
Bye.